ABC Radio Australia.
Now, if you saw a 15-foot-tall wooden funerary pole towering above you, would you recognise its origins? Well, it's a unique sculpture of the Azmat people in southwest Papua. And nearly 15,000 kilometres away in an art museum in New York stands these giant poles amongst thousands of artefacts from across the Pacific Ocean. So joining us live from New York to share about the significance of these is Dr. Maya Nukul, curator for the Arts of Oceania and the Michael C. Rockefeller Wing of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. With that, I say kia ora eho and welcome to Pacific Beat.
Oh, kia ora. Morena.
Thank you so much for joining.
From New York City.
Absolutely. I know the time difference. I know it's afternoon there. So appreciate your time this morning, Maya. Look, firstly, how are you feeling since the reopening of the space and having to really see our Pacific artifacts on display?
Oh, look, I'm just so happy that we're open and the public are coming in and really enjoying it. We've had such an amazing response from, you know, visitors and colleagues in the building who are just seeing these works with fresh eyes. So it's really gratifying. You know, we've been on this project really for best part of 10 years, you know, which is, of course, museum time. Things move steadily in an institution like this, but it's been a massive undertaking. You know, it's 40,000 square foot of galleries, and the Oceania collection shares the space with two other collections from sub-Saharan Africa and the ancient Americas. So our team here in the museum has really done this incredible job of, you know, presenting these works in the kind of elevated, you know, architectural space that they deserve. So we're thrilled, yeah. And I'm just kind of landing steadily, actually, after an incredible week of opening events with our delegations. Yeah.
Well, Maya, I know that, you know, the wing that you work in is specifically named after Michael C. Rockefeller, right? I'm just wondering, can you maybe share with our listeners who may not be aware of who he is, like, yeah, who was he and why did he have such a fascination with specifically the indigenous Azmat people?
Right, yeah, well, Michael Rockefeller was a young 23-year-old, recent Harvard graduate when he went out to the western part of New Guinea. He was up in the Balim, with the highlands of New Guinea with Balim peoples, actually as the sound technician and stills photographer on a film that was being made by Robert Gardner, an anthropological filmmaker. And he went there in 1961, and when they wrapped the film, he went down to the southwest coast and connected with a Dutch man who was living there, Adrian Gebrans, and joined him on these, you know, forays up into the interior, these rivers that run through that southwest coast of New Guinea, and was meeting with artists and headmen and, you know, village elders in these communities that live inland off that coast. And he was really pretty pioneering because he was really invested in the art and saw it as art. And in that era of, you know, the early 60s, we have to remember arts from our region of the world were really seen as ethnographic and kind of they were kind of locked into this kind of static, timeless kind of, you know, lens. And so for this young New Yorker to come over there, and he was a trustee of his father's museum. His father was Nelson Rockefeller, who created the museum that was transferred to the Met in 1982 and became the foundational collection that we look after and steward in this department. And so he got excited about the art and thought, wow, this is the kind of art, you know, that New Yorkers, you know, this would take the New York art world by storm. And he really saw it for its visual dynamism and its, you know, staggering beauty. And he was, more importantly, really engaged with the artists and meeting them and talking with them. He took, you know, these beautiful portraits that we have in our archive that we've made into a 6-minute in-gallery audiovisual feature, which is, you know, the portraits of artists that he took. So the works that we can display downstairs in the galleries are by named artists. You know, that's quite unusual for a collection of oceanic art. So we know the names of artists, their clan groups, you know, what their intention was with some of the iconography that they're, you know, laying into these incredible sculptures and body masks and spirit canoes. So yeah, it's a phenomenal story, and it's quite unique. And so, you know, and it's really tied to New York. So it was important for us to kind of open the galleries with this reminder of the legacy of this young man who went to this part of the world and you know, and actually lost his life there. So it's an important and special collection.
And speaking of collection, you know, I mentioned earlier, I was talking about that 15-foot-tall wooden funerary pole. I mean, it's sort of similar, you know, looking at the pictures, similar to a totem pole, I would say. I mean, very striking. What do they actually represent?
So, yeah, these are the bish or spirit poles, and we've displayed them in this kind of dynamic crescent shape. There are 9 of them, and as you say, 15-foot-tall. They're really like upright canoes. They're really vessels with agency that are installed to, you know, acknowledge the recently deceased in a community and to assist in the transition of the souls of those recently departed members of the community into the ancestral realm. So they are vessels that, you know, and help this crossing over of a threshold from the physical and mortal realm into the spiritual or metaphysical realm. So they were, you know, used to, you know, augur the transition, as I've said, you know, in these funerary ceremonies. But actually the ones, 4 of the ones in the set of 9 that we display were in fact installed to inaugurate a new ceremonial house in the village that Michael Rockefeller had visited. And the community actually then offered to, you know, reinstall them and reenact the ceremony so that he could document it and photograph it. And so, you know, the shift really over time in how these things are used has happened. So they were used to inaugurate, you know, this yew or the ceremonial house. And so they're really portraits of members of the community. So the figures stand on top of each other, and then you have this enormous kind of projection, which is one of the roots of the mangrove tree. So essentially they are the height of a single, you know, mangrove tree but they're flipped upside down. So that single projection, that wing-like chimin, as it's called, is one of those plank-like roots, you know, that you get at the base of a mangrove tree. But what's fascinating for me is that in this part of New Guinea, we start to see this fundamental idea that you get right across the Pacific and ends up with the story of Tane pushing up Ranginui and Papatuanuku for Maori. That is Tane as a tree kind of pushing up to split his parents, separate his parents, and propping up the sky with the roots propping up the canopy of the sky. And so what's a really incredible part of curating a collection like this is that I get to see where those ideas that are so fundamental for Maori and other Polynesian communities, you know, at the end of this line, where it starts, you know, and it starts as early as, you know, you can see it in the art that's in Papua New Guinea and in different parts of New Guinea and across. So you can really, with this collection, tell this really expansive story of Oceania and our connections across space and time.
So, so fascinating. And Maya, I mean, what has been the reaction, though, to those right there in New York who've been able to come through and maybe view the arts of Oceania?
Well, I mean, they're just so taken, I think, with the monumentality and the stature of these works. They are pretty unfamiliar, you know, to a lot of people. We have a really international audience who comes through these galleries and this museum. And then we have New Yorkers who come and return, you know, many times. So they love the beach poles. They feel very kind of, you know, they're pretty iconic installation for this museum. But I think what people are really taken with is this expansiveness, you know, of the imagination for oceanic art. It's really unlike anything they've ever seen. And what I tried to do with curating the new galleries was really, you know, lean into those strengths, really, these really unique materials that we use in the Pacific, the fibers, the woods, ochres, you know, they're very different, you know, that seasonality and that kind of ephemeral nature of these things. Oftentimes these artworks, you know, as we know, we don't, they're not really designed to last forever. You know, you use them and, you know, in ceremony or for a festival or community gathering. And then often, you know, by the next season, you know, your artists are making new ones. So that's kind of at odds with a museum, where what we do here is, you know, conservation and our scientific research departments, you know, they want to kind of fix things in time. Whereas in the Pacific, of course, things have this natural life cycle.
That's right.
So what I've been trying to do is like help people understand the materials and the kind of cyclical time that we live under and within in the Pacific. And it's not so much linear, you know, from A to Z. It's like things, you know, are seasonal and they repeat in these cycles. And so I think that's what people are taking away with them, that this real distinctiveness of Pacific art. You walk into our galleries from Greek and Roman, you know, so that department is obviously showing portraits of political leaders, you know, from the Greek and Roman civilizations that are carved in very durable materials like marble and stone. And then you kind of walk into Oceania and it's feathers and fiber and all this incredible wood and color. And I think people are really responding to that warmth, you know, of the materials. And that's helping them, you know, just get to want to know more about it. And so then they have an opportunity to really engage and understand things from a much more indigenous-led perspective.
It's been fascinating to listen through and hear you describe all the things about our Pacific work and artwork there on the other side of the world from here in Melbourne. But look, Dr. Maya, that is all the time that we have for this morning, but we just want to appreciate you for coming on our show this morning.
Oh, thanks, Agnes. It's great to meet you.
Absolutely. Great to meet you too. That, of course, is Met Curator for the Arts of Oceania New York, Dr. Maya Nuckel, here on Pacific Beat.